From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a detailed look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today, On Deadline is looking at the Justice Department's lawsuit against Apple. It alleges that the company has monopolized the mobile phone market. It's one of several antitrust discussions percolating as many wonder if Meta, Amazon, Google, and more are so large that they're killing the spirit of competition that drives America and its economy. For Apple, the Biden administration is alleging they've illegally monopolized the smartphone market. The lawsuit filed last week by the Department of Justice alleges that Apple squashed its competition with restrictive App Store terms, high fees, and what it calls its walled garden approach. Apple denied any wrongdoing after the lawsuit was filed, saying that it plans on fighting the allegations. The company also said the lawsuit could have major repercussions for the future of technology, noting that it could empower the government to, quote, take a heavy hand in designing people's technology. CBS tech contributor Ian Schur joined Odyssey in Dallas to share more on why the lawsuit is being filed now.
Why a lawsuit now? iPhones have been around for at least 16 different generations.
You know, that is a great question. And a lot of it actually comes down to the power that Apple has. You know, one of the things that the government appears to be really focused on is that not only has Apple been able to grow into one of the most highly valued companies in the world, but also that it's been able to exercise its power to really crush a lot of its competition. And the examples they give are stuff that ultimately, right, the point of all of this antitrust issues is impacts on us as consumers, right? So the fact that text messaging with someone who's not on an iPhone is pretty terrible. That right there is an example that the government gives as Apple acting monopolistically. They could choose to make it better, but they're choosing not to. Also, by controlling the experience that we have on the iPhone so much and not allowing other companies access to stuff like changing out the web browser as easily or other things like that, create an environment where Apple pretty much is guaranteed to win when it steps into something and anyone trying to compete with it is guaranteed to lose. And so that is a lot of what the government's trying to get around. It's a really interesting case in that regard.
How likely are we going to change our habits? It's been so long that I feel like Americans have been kind of brainwashed with, the Apple-Samsung war. Would this do anything to the actual consumer market?
So I think it's important to remember that just like with Microsoft in 2000, right, when the more than that now, right, more than two decades ago when they were sued and as a monopoly, it didn't really change Microsoft that much. What it did was that it forced the company to change its behavior in the market, right? It had to stop actively crushing competition as much as it was. You can argue how successful that was. But ultimately, really what it was about was creating the environment that once we got through the dot-com bust, right, in 2004, 2005, things started to kind of bubble up again. You have now companies like Facebook, Amazon, all these others that are massive, massive companies. And would they have been able to be so successful if the rules against Microsoft hadn't been put in place? That is, I think, what we're thinking about when it comes to Apple, right? It's not so much what we're going to experience. Like, yeah, hopefully, if nothing else, it's not going to be so terrible texting people who don't have iPhones. But other than that, a lot of this is going to be about how Apple approaches other developers.
What is something like a lawsuit like this? What does that do to the company's bottom line? How has it affected Apple, say, for example, on the markets?
Their stock price, for what it's worth, has dropped a little bit, right? We're talking, let's see, it was at around 175 before, now it's at 172. So take that for what it's worth, right? We're talking a couple percentage points. It's still worth $2.6 trillion. So, you know, have they been hurt? Yes. A lot? No. But I think what's really key here is that if the government wins, I think there's going to be a larger question about whether or not if opening things up would actually be better for Apple than the long run, right? I mean, they've been kind of stuck in their ways of being very controlling over the experience, partially because Steve Jobs wanted to be able to control every app that went on the App Store. He was very focused on even the icons that were on the home screen when you did ads, right? Like, it was a big deal. And so that perception has always flowed through that company. And I think that maybe pushing them to be a little more, I'll call it customer centric, even though they are obviously very good at customer service, that pushing them to think that way might actually be positive for the company and ultimately end up doing better.
If the lawsuit goes to court and Apple loses, iPhone users could find themselves in a whole new era of smartphones. Among the changes would be a more robust app store with more options. The company would also no longer be able to restrict super apps that work whether a user has an iPhone or another smartphone, like the ones that are popular in Asia. It would also mark an end to those green and blue text bubbles we all know about. They notate who has an iPhone and who doesn't. Critics have long suggested that this creates a class divide among smartphone users and that it's something Apple should fix. And a final change would be more open services. For example, Apple Watch users could pair their device to phones that aren't iPhones, and that would create more options for consumers. To the joy of many, we're sure, some of them would presumably be cheaper. To share more on the potential changes that could come from the suit, John Battelle, a senior fellow at the Burns Center for Social Change and a professor of practice at Northeastern University in Boston, joined Odyssey.
So who's the aggrieved party here? Who gets harmed?
Well, the suit does take the position that the aggrieved party is the American consumer. It's not on behalf of any particular companies. Companies are used as examples, like Spotify, but the actual aggrieved party is the American population.
And Apple is responding in a statement earlier this week. They said, "We believe this lawsuit is wrong on the facts and the law, and we will vigorously defend against it." So Apple's position, is this just that, you know, they have a good product and that's what people want? I mean, is it illegal to be a good business?
Well, almost every antitrust case in the history of antitrust, this is the argument made by the party that has been sued. Some listeners might recall the AT&T case or the Microsoft case, the IBM case. All of these were landmark antitrust suits in the technology business, and all of them made exactly the case you just laid out, which is we just have a better product, and we don't know what you're talking about. And when it comes to Apple, you know, it's funny. I covered Apple as a Cub reporter in San Francisco in the late 1980s. The idea that Apple was ever going to be the Goliath as opposed to the David was laughable because it was such a small company compared to the big guys back then. But things have certainly changed in the past 30 years.
You know, it appears that this is probably just my own memory, that there are these gaps between the times the federal government decides, well, that we've reached a monopoly status here. Is there a threshold you have to get to before they get interested and involved in these sorts of things?
Yes, each market seems to have its own definition, and they are not consistent across markets. What might be considered a monopoly in one market, like, say, internet search and Google, might not be the same for a market like smartphones and Apple's App Store. But generally speaking, it's a preponderance of control of a particular market, and that usually means well over 50%.
We look at Meta, we look at Google, we look at Amazon. What influence might this case have on big tech?
Well, it's a good question, and I think the answer is significant influence. Although, of course, here we are in an election year, and as we know, every 4 years, the posture of the U.S. government towards these kinds of things can shift very dramatically. And the Department of Justice tends to not shift as dramatically, but we've seen it change pretty significantly administration to administration. So my guess is Apple will do what most large companies in such a situation do, which is drag this out as long as possible.
Can you imagine Apple being broken up?
I could not. I think I could imagine that, to be honest, happening much more easily with a company like Google that has some natural lines where it might be broken up that would address potential antitrust concerns. I think Apple, however, is a company that has built its entire business on being fully integrated throughout its business. And so I can't imagine an easy way to resolve this through a breakup, nor, of course, can I imagine Apple ever going willingly down that path.
So, how do cases like this go? Has much changed since the days of Standard Oil, American Tobacco, or the AT&T breakups? Could Apple be the next big American company to be added to the list of major breakups? To share more on how prosecutors will likely attack this case, Bill Kovacic, who formerly chaired the Federal Trade Commission and now teaches antitrust law at George Washington University, joined Odyssey.
So let's talk about what the government's action is today vis-a-vis Apple, and really targeting more than Apple, honing in on iPhone. What is it that bothers the U.S. government about what Apple has been doing with its iPhone?
In general, the government is saying that Apple is using a variety of contractual and other techniques to ensure that developers cannot create products that could be used on the iPhone, products that would give users a greater array of choices and possibilities, and yes, reduce the cost of using the iPhone and to create other options for them. So it's basically a theory that says that the Apple is establishing a framework in which it will control access to the iPhone, the use of the iPhone, and defeat efforts by innovative developers to offer alternatives that might be available to consumers.
Now, of course, throughout the years, Apple has always contended, as I'm sure you know, that it has a virtual closed system as a way of protecting the people who buy its products from things like hackers and others who are out for no good, and that to open it up would be to create havoc in the system. Which of the viewpoints resonates the most with you, the government's position or Apple's?
I'd say both of them are, in a sense, are a bit of an exaggeration, but Apple's argument is not a frivolous one by any means. And we can expect during the case that Apple will make clear to the court that this is the logic of their program, that it's designed to confer a massive benefit to consumers in the form of greater security, greater accountability for Apple. What we don't know and what we can't see right now is what the internal evidence generated from the company says about the point. And in antitrust litigation and testing this kind of justification, a crucial question is whether the company's own internal reflections about what it's doing match up well with the public observations. And at the same time, the government's assertions about the degree of harm, the diminished level of innovation, again, have to be tested by not simply the company's own records, but the views of third parties. So what we're seeing is some degree of exaggeration, but the fact that there are underlying strong arguments and considerations at work here make us very interested in what the evidence says in the courtroom. And the great thing about antitrust trials, it's not a great deal of enjoyment for the company, but it gives us an opportunity to see at a level of detail information that we wouldn't otherwise have about how firms operate.
Since its humble beginnings in a garage on the West Coast, Apple has become nearly synonymous with the word technology. And that's not accidental. There are receipts in the lawsuit, including an email where an executive emailed Steve Jobs in 2010. That executive complained that an Amazon ad showed a Kindle app that could be used on an iPhone or an Android. Jobs was clear in his response. Apple would force developers to use its payment system to lock in both developers and users on its platform. And that alleged stranglehold has come with a cost for consumers. In just the last year, the average price of an iPhone has gone from $882 to $988. Android smartphones reached a new high of around $286 on average last year. And sure, you could buy the cheaper phone, but everyone knows you do miss out on some of the Apple features that are only available on the iPhone. In Europe, they've been fighting Apple's tactics for years. For instance, just last year, the EU created regulations mandating a common charger standard across everyday tech products. That forced Apple to integrate USB-C charging ports into the iPhone 15, as well as next-generation AirPod Pros and EarPods. Apple fought it, though. It wanted to keep that lucrative system that forced customers to only buy Lightning cables sold by Apple if they wanted to operate their phones. Here in the U.S., the DOJ's case against Apple is fascinating. That's according to Alex Kirshner, who wrote about it in Slate. He said it's fascinating because it reads like an almost emotional complaint from an Android owner resigned to being the green bubble in too many iMessage group chats. Now that infamous green text bubble could be the final frontier in the fight against Apple. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strauser, and Myron Kaplan. And me, I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.